papermen meet such interesting people. They know the lowdown, now it can be told. I'll tell you quite reliably off the record about some charming people I have known. For I meet politicians and grafters by the score, killers plain and fancy, it's really quite a bore. Oh, newspapermen meet such interesting people.
When a show begins with Dr. Shartok asking, have you been drinking? We think it's going to be a great show. Welcome to the Media Project. I'm Rex Smith, editor of the Times Union, here with Dr. Alan Shartok, the CEO of Northeast Public Radio. The only thing he's been drinking is caffeine. What's in that container?
Coffee.
Coffee.
I need coffee in the morning. I don't sleep well, and maybe that's why I don't sleep well, but, you know.
Then
in order to stay up all day, I have to drink more caffeine.
His life is a vicious circle.
It is.
I tell you, there's somebody really ought to look into this. A shrink, probably. Caitlin Brown is here, a professor at the College of St. Rose. Welcome. Glad to see you.
Hi,
wonderful to see you.
Good to see you.
Absolutely. And Judy Patrick, vice president of the New York Press Association, longtime editor of the Daily Gazette in Schenectady.
And sober as a judge. So-
And has a really, you know, nice sunburn on.
If my dermatologist is listening, I use SPF 50, so I do not have a sunburn.
Well, it's something, and that's why
it's a glow.
It's just a healthy glow. A healthy glow. You know, if you want to have a part of this show, fools that you might be, you can write to us, media@wamc.org, which is what Henry in Palinville did. Henry wrote and said he talked about a story that was broadcast in WAMC about a suspect in Torrington, Connecticut, who offered to turn himself into police if his wanted poster got 15,000 likes on Facebook. 29-year-old Jose Sims has 7 arrest warrants. He's being sought as a fugitive after failing to appear in court. That's what the AP story says. And says he contacted them through Facebook and says he will turn himself in if his poster gets 15,000 likes. Now, what Henry in Palinville, our listener, wants to know is our thoughts on the ethics of reporting such a story, which balances, he says, the goal of bringing a fugitive to justice against abetting the fugitive's use of social media for self-promotion.
Okay, just a couple of things here, Rex. Hmm. Is Henry the actual felon, or is he talking about...
No, Henry is our listener who's writing to ask us about this.
Okay,
the felon's name is Jose.
Jose, yeah, okay.
Okay, so we got that part straight.
Okay, so to me, dog bites man, no story, man bites dog. Story, that's a story. People are interested in that.
Mm-hmm.
That's why you led with it, right?
I didn't lead with it. WAMC did.
No, but you led with it.
Oh, I led this show. Well, I led it because Henry wrote to
that.
Us, and I just
don't,
want us to
don't try to
pay
fool
attention
with me,
to
Rex,
Henry.
I got the story.
But it's fascinating to think that this alleged felon would take to Facebook to get these likes in order to decide whether or not he's going to turn himself in. To me, this is the foundation for a book deal.
I see.
Maybe he knows he's going to get caught anyway, and he figures, well, I'll turn it into something.
Well, Judy, you've always been a good editor. What do you think?
I'm, in fact, I'm trying to put myself back on the desk, and I haven't been on a desk for a while, but I can hear myself saying, you know what, this is a stunt. This is no story. Let him try to find an outlet someplace else. Hmm. But again, I haven't been on a desk in a year, and Facebook has really taken off in a year. I still think of it as a stunt. You know, I have a limited amount of space, although online I have a ton of space, but it might get a lot of clicks, but I think, no, I don't think I'd do it.
So the thing is that if you were the editor of the Torrington Register Citizen, which is the paper that was confronted with this is the Torrington Police Department, and they put out a press release saying, we're looking for Jose, but Jose says, you know, that's a pretty irresistible story.
I think it is a story. I actually do think it's a story because Facebook is having such sway across what happens in this universe now that not to pay attention to Facebook could be considered negligence. And I don't think that we want to be negligent as journalists. I think the public needs to be aware how many different ways Facebook is being used.
And okay, now here, in that regard, listen to this, how Facebook is being used. This goes to the fraudulent videos, the deceptively edited videos about Nancy Pelosi in a smear campaign. These videos are still up on Facebook and Twitter. Fox News used them. The administration tweeted them. Rudy Giuliani tweeted them. In case you missed this, folks, it is videos that were slowed down and seemed to make Nancy Pelosi appear drunk, I guess, is what they thought. This seems to be a recurring theme.
Yeah, hey.
Spring fever here at the Media Project.
We used to have this woman who broadcast from here who talked about her father-in-law, who she didn't like, and she would say he was the slow talker. You get that? Slow talker. He went very slowly. So they were making her into a slow talker, although she already is a bit of a slow talker, so that when they really slowed it down, it was an unfair caricature of her. And Facebook, your point is, Facebook refuses to take it down. Now, YouTube took it down, but not Facebook. Are you guys impressed that I knew that?
I'm really impressed that you even know what YouTube is. This is really great.
No, I know what YouTube is.
You know what Netflix is.
I'm not so sure about some of the other things.
But, you know, it does go into the issue of free speech and satire. I mean, you'll see the late night comedy shows do things with videos all the time. My problem with how this was handled was the fact that Fox News in particular was treating it as real, and they were presenting it as real. When it's offered as satire, it's clearly in a satire environment.
I think Judy makes a really good point about agenda setting and framing. I think that the way Fox would be framing this is very problematic, and it should not be framed as this is an actual issue that's happening, that's real. You know, Nancy Pelosi is a strong voice for the Democratic Party, and if the only way that the other party is able to fight against her is to manipulate media, that signifies something completely other.
But here we're talking about, it's interesting that you kind of conflate the other party and Fox News, which is a fair and unsurprising conflation because Fox News is so much the mouthpiece of the administration. And this gets to the question that we were talking about a couple of weeks ago when some Democrats were saying, I'm not going to be on Fox News, and others were saying, I will. I'll participate in these town hall meetings. The question is, are you giving legitimacy to an outfit that does this kind of thing, that purports to be a news organization, but instead distorts the news so as to make its political point?
So let's back up on that and take a look at it, Rex. I mean, what we see here is the number one cable channel, right? More people watch Fox News than anything else.
Correct.
So now you got guys and women who are running for the presidency, and they say, okay, we know the Democrats are here, we know the Republicans are here, we know it, but there's a whole bunch of people in the middle, and a lot of those people watch Fox News. So to me, it certainly makes sense to go on Fox, especially if they are going to give whoever is going on a fair ride. And I think they have been doing that. In other words, when that interview is going on, they have been fair with them as opposed to mocking them.
But it's not fair to use a video that's been manipulated to hurt the reputation of Nancy Pelosi. So.
Right, and they did it multiple times. It wasn't just once on one show and correct it. It was show after show after show. And even the president conceded that he shared it after Pelosi had suggested that an intervention was needed by his family. So Trump, it was tit for tat with
Trump. You're not surprised by that, are you?
You know what? Believe it or not, I continue to be surprised.
No matter what he does, you're surprised.
I am. I am surprised. Where are we going to go next?
You know, but that is a very interesting point because the networks themselves are all treating Trump in a different way. So they're not, for example, playing the entirety of every time he gets up before his adoring followers. And every time he tweets something, they're not doing that either. So apparently there's a decision that has been made that there are limits on what we're going to do to help this guy.
That's called gatekeeping.
Yes, it is.
It is. And, you know, it's become something that is more pervasive than we ever would have imagined with respect to the president of the United States. I mean, on a much more granular scale, when I first arrived in this area in the late 80s to cover Mario Cuomo, my predecessor as the Albany bureau chief for Newsday said to me, you know, I write something about every public appearance by the governor because I figure if the governor is speaking in public, it's newsworthy. So I adopted that stance initially until I realized I was going to different places around the country following him around to his speeches. He was giving the exact same speech each place, and it was very hard to find new things to write about the same speech. So I became a gatekeeper and decided, okay, if he's not going to say anything new, I'm not going to write about it. But it made me feel a little uncomfortable.
You know, Rex, it's interesting because the present Governor Cuomo has decided that he wants to use public radio. So he's on WNYC in New York virtually weekly. Mm-hmm. He's come to us several times. In fact, one day last week, he asked for 2 days back to back because he was laying out his agenda and it was all new stuff. And I asked him a question which made a lot of newspapers, which is, how come you're charging $25,000 a person to come to your fundraisers. What do you need that for? And there was a little bit of a silence. And I said, so the only reason, since you're not running for president, is that you're running for a fourth term now. Are you running for a fourth term? And he said, yes.
So you were a journalist, Chartak.
You
asked
All
the
right.
good question. Attaboy.
Excellent. Excellent
That's
stuff.
Condescending.
Who, me? You? Never.
Who's accurate? But that's...
He is so bad. Rex is so bad. Did you see that? And I said, you murmured, but correct. In other words.
What can
I
you
missed
do?
It. Thank you.
It's a wonderful thing. But the gatekeeper role is part of our responsibility. It is to, you know, as we often say on the show, the first tenet of the Code of Ethics, seek the truth and report it as fully as possible. The truth is not always found in just parroting whatever, in this case, the President of the United States says, but it's in deciding what is truthful, what is worth putting out there, what in the context of, as Judy says, the limited amount of space you have in a newspaper, limited time on a broadcast, what's worth putting out there.
But the problem with this is that it's very subjective. So that if you decide that you're not going to say something or print something that the President, or have it on the radio that the President said, the President's supporters are going to say, there you go again, it's the phony press.
It's, you could call it subjective, but you could call it analytical or thoughtful. Yes, so some people might say it's subjective, but we do apply standards. It's not just willy-nilly, and it's subjective is not the same as partisan.
Well, I read your column, excellent column, every week.
Why,
in,
thank you.
In the Times Union, and it's clear to me where you're coming down from. You're the editor, but you're also coming down from a basically, I'm sorry to say this, anti-Trump position. Now, that mirrors mine, because that certainly is where I come from. Mm-hmm. Nevertheless, when you decide not to give ink to something that the President has said, people say, there he goes again.
Yeah. Yeah, and that is hard. I mean, it is a difficult position because I do run the news department, and yes. So I've really thought hard about this. The column once a week is my personal opinion, and I waited many years before saying, you know, I have, in reflecting my personal opinion, I have to say these things about someone who is, in fact, not speaking the truth, that is, in fact, lying, who is attacking the media. So it's on those points that I try to base my column.
Well, that's always a tough one, isn't it?
Yeah.
You know, I mean, I remember for years reading the Judy's newspaper, Schenectady Gazette, and saying, you know, why aren't they a little bit more forceful? Now, that was a community where a guy named Ducci got elected mayor for life, and he was a Republican. And so there were a lot of Republicans. We can take that, you know, to the bank. And I often wondered whether or not, depending on the complexion, the political complexion of a community, whether or not one uses this subjective judgment to worry about who's out there.
That's an interesting question. You mean, does an editor think about the political complexion of the readership and deciding how to handle it?
Or the community, sure.
Well,
to be quite honest, the politics changes so much. I remember when Saratoga Springs was real Republican, and I had covered that. It affected the makeup or the composition of the boards themselves, but it never really affected the coverage. And in Schenectady, we never knew what the political persuasion of our readership was at all. Either.
You knew there were a lot of Republicans because they kept elect. That's why I said that Frank Ducey, who
Democratic.
Just passed, by the way.
He did. But, you know, what we're more mindful of is whether or not our readership is conservative or liberal, and how to make sure that we get both sides in the paper. And I can remember, I've talked about this before, how difficult it was for us to find a really well-reasoned conservative commentary for the paper, especially. Mm-hmm. When we were getting a lot of calls from pro-Trump people who were saying, why aren't you writing more pro-Trump pieces? We were just writing pieces. We were writing articles. But on the opinion page, it was hard to find, again, well-reasoned, thoughtful columns that were conservative in nature.
Well, that problem persists. I mean, we have a lot of conservative columnists, syndicated conservative columnists. Michael Gerson, for example, was the chief speechwriter for George W. Bush.
He's
now Cal Thomas is out there, but finding conservative voices does not satisfy people because
exactly.
A lot of the conservative voices are not pro-Trump. Exactly. Standard line conservatives are very much, in fact, there's this organization called Republicans for Democracy, I think.
Yeah, Bill Kristol. And, you know, I was appearing in a very good newspaper, which used to be the editor of the Troy Record, and on a regular basis, and it was just me, I think. And then all of a sudden, Cal Thomas was being featured right next to me on the top of the page where they're advertising it. Somebody must have complained.
Well, what's really interesting question, though. It is an interesting question that Rex raised about. So what about, what if the population, the readership, the people paying for the newspaper might be offended? It reminds me of the movie Spotlight when they were doing the work about the clergy sex abuse in Boston. And the Boston Globe was covering that story. And the big question at the Boston Globe is, the majority of our readers are Roman Catholics. What is this going to do if we reveal the extraordinary violations of the Catholic Church? And they did it anyway, obviously. And
4 months ago, the Houston Chronicle, my sister newspaper in Hearst, did the same thing involving the Southern Baptist clergy, a humongous expose, a terrific bit of investigative reporting by the Chronicle, which has gotten a lot of national attention. And a young man who used to be in my staff was on the PBS NewsHour. And the result is a revolution of sorts within the Southern Baptist Church, which in Texas is as powerful as the Catholics are in Massachusetts. So the question is, do you undertake that sort of thing? Or could I write my column that Alan is right? I sometimes take issue with the president and the way he handles things. Could I write that if I were the editor of a newspaper in Mobile, Alabama, or
well,
some such?
Well, you know, there are a lot of Roman Catholics, of course, in New York State. And both Mario Cuomo and his son Andrew Cuomo have taken great exception to some of the positions of the church, including on abortion. And so I asked Andrew about that the other day, if I may call him that. And he
may call you doctor. So there you go.
And in which case, he was very clear that he was at dissonance with the church on many positions. And I said, well, I saw the New York Post ran a front page story, The Wood, which had a bishop quoted saying, Mario Cuomo would burn in hell. So I asked him, do you ever worry about burning in hell? He said, well, I have my position, and they have their position. And I said, wait a second now, I don't understand this. I always thought that the last word in the Roman Catholic Church was by the Pope. He's infallible. That's why they use the word infallible. And it was a very interesting conversation. You can find it online at WAMC.org.
It's a little misinterpretation of papal infallibility. I'm not Catholic, but when the Pope speaks ex cathedra, when he speaks about matters of faith, he yes. interprets them for the church.
I think the last word is Jesus or God, I think, in the Catholic Church, I'm pretty sure.
And by the way, that's Galen. That is exactly what he said. He said, I believe in Jesus Christ. And he said it about five times. So that's that.
So how do we cover, raises another interesting issue, actually, which is good for us to get into, and that is the use of religion by political figures and how we can cover that, because it is something of significance. I heard an NPR story just the other day on Kirsten Gillibrand in which she was using, she is part of a prayer group in Congress, and she's very outspoken about faith being important to her. Pete Buttigieg is very clear about the Episcopal Church is an important part of his life. And
he's gay, of course. We should point that
right.
out.
Right, and the issue of gays in the Episcopal Church is just dividing that denomination. Albany is one of 7 or 8 dioceses in the country which has taken a conservative anti-gay position.
After they had a rainbow flag on their church right on the corner of Main and Madison. So that's changed.
Yeah, well, and some of the individual churches are in defiance of the bishop.
The flag is gone, but
is
I remember the days when it was there.
Wow.
Yeah, we wrote about it.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Anyway, so what do you do when politicians talk about religion? In journalism, we're often pretty reluctant to write much about religion. It's not a topic we're really comfortable with, right?
Well, it is interesting because, you know, if I do say so, my conversation with Andrew Cuomo about religion was fascinating. And not one newspaper, they picked up a lot of stuff, but nobody wanted to touch that.
So faith is a very important part of many people's lives. And in fact, it is at the heart of both much of what good happens on our globe and much of the bad that happens. So journalism is beyond obligated to cover faith in all its many forms, and when politicians are talking about faith, we have an obligation to follow that, too.
Yeah, Professor, but, and I say that, you know, respectfully.
Condescendingly.
Yes, Professor, but...
What up, Alan?
But if you think about what you've just said, you have an obligation to. Rex has just said, but we don't. Religion is something that is so difficult that we don't do it. So are you criticizing the press for not doing it?
I'm saying that I think we have an obligation to cover it. Is it critical if they're not? I read the paper and I see that it is being covered. read any story about the Middle East. Give me a break.
Yeah, you know, I used to think that religion was very important to voters. It goes back to the Kennedy election, where people were really concerned about electing a Roman Catholic, believing that the Pope would eventually rule the country. But then when Donald Trump got elected, I realized that he did not really have a clear religion, but he got support from religious people anyway. So I have a feeling that people put religion aside when it's not convenient for them or for their position.
Yeah. The observation, I think, is that evangelical Christianity has become more a political movement than a religious one. And that is a controversial thing to say, though I've seen analysts who've really said that when you look at what Donald Trump's positions are on issues, it's kind of hard to make them square with
any faith or any sort of belief in anything other than oneself.
Sorry about that.
Well, he claims that he met Marla Maples. He claims that he met his second wife at church.
I ran into Marla and Donald at the track when the Times Union had deployed me up there.
Really?
And the Donald wouldn't shake my hand, claiming germophobia. And Marla, being the gracious, what do you call it, arm candy that she was, explained his germophobia to me.
That's very nice.
She was lovely.
Uh-huh. Well, what did she explain about the germophobia?
Just that he won't shake your hand because he's a germaphobe. But I watched him. He shakes people's hands. So
yeah, he's kind of gotten over it. I
dodged that, though. I won't have to go into quarantine now. So,
by the way, if you want to share your views on any of this, you're welcome to media@wamc.org. This all began with a letter from Henry in Palinville.
Thanks, Henry.
We've been wandering off ever since, but you're welcome to join us. Alan Chartok, Kaylin Brown, Judy Patrick, and I'm Rex Smith. You know, one of the things we've been kind of dancing around is the level at which journalists themselves kind of bring themselves into their coverage. This is happening especially, you know, there are reporters who kind of become a big thing. During the Reagan administration, for example, Sam Donaldson was such a big figure. He would stick out in press conferences and people would flock to see what he was doing. And
Dan Rather
during the Nixon administration obviously was a big player. Maggie Haberman of the New York Times, one of the White House reporters, second generation Times reporter, daughter of Clyde Haberman, Times columnist. Maggie Haberman is a fine political writer, but she's come under fire because some of the criticism of her reporting gets pretty personal, talks about her herself. And she does, of course, get personal phone calls from the president. She's very much a presence, sometimes on television. It is a difficult situation because she says, "I don't like when we become the story. It is never comfortable when we become the story."
You know, I watch CNN a lot. There she is in the morning. And I've always thought she was very subdued, bending over backwards to be fair to the president. So clearly, you know, when you come in for this kind of criticism, you have to react on some level.
This all came to a head with the publication this past or Memorial Day weekend of a profile or a story she wrote about Hope Hicks that included a very glamorous photograph of Hope Hicks. Mm-hmm. Now, she got a lot of criticism, but as we know here, she didn't choose the photograph. In fact, it was a file photo, but it was definitely a glam shot, and it made it seem like she was glorifying Hope Hicks. She also used the term existential, and, you know, it seems one of the more popular phrases in journalism nowadays, and you know, whether or not to testify before the congressional hearing, whether or not that was an existential crisis for
her. Well, you know, it's so interesting that you say that, Judy, because it just so happens that the woman is very, very beautiful.
And Hope Hicks, you mean?
Hope Hicks, yeah. Uh-huh.
But that's your perspective, and why are we talking about what she looks like? Tell me.
And I'm going to tell you why. Because, again, you are sitting next to an editor from the Schenectady paper. She's sitting next to an editor from the Albany Times Union. He's sitting next to the window.
The window. Nobody next to me.
And, again, there is an intuitive sense on the part of editors what's going to play. Now, you can give me the sort of stuff that you just gave me, and, you know, I can take it. But I do think that what's going on is an assessment that, you know, maybe she would play well because we have this picture of her.
Hmm.
Judy's,
you know, I think
face.
It's a legitimate story about whether or not she was Hicks, who was right in the Oval Office in many of these conversations, will testify. I think that's a legitimate story. Figure out whether she is present the facts that she's faced with this dilemma.
But
I think the framing of it was the photograph. And in fact, the Times has since changed the word existential to crucial, a crucial decision. But I think the photo was still up. I don't know why they took that photo in the first place.
I do. I just told you why.
Well, the other thing I want to say is at least it's a woman who's made a name for herself in the business. It was Sam Donaldson and Dan Rather. And sometimes it was Helen Thomas a little bit. But
the criticism is coming from the left, from
exactly.
anti-Trump forces who are saying that Maggie Haberman is insufficiently anti-Trump.
Just what I said just a few seconds ago. I watch her on CNN, and she's very careful about how
she's careful.
She parses her words.
Which some would say is appropriate for a reporter, but people on the left want their reporters to come with the same kind of bias that the Fox reporters. Listen to that slip.
So Rexy, then you compare MSNBC, which is way to the left, and CNN, which is to the left, but much more moderate. They're the ones who have Maggie Haberman on their broadcasts. And I think it's reflective of the general demeanor of the two stations. As for Judy, I have a question for you, Judy. Existential, it seems to me, is a word that most people don't understand. And they may have changed it because people don't get what it means.
You know, and I've watched Haberman on the shows, too. And what she is she's actually being a very careful journalist.
That's right.
And in fact, that can be boring to listen to because they're so careful with their words. But despite the chaos around her on these shows, she tends to be a straight arrow. But she is getting beaten up on social media big time.
You know, Jeffrey Toobin, the CNN legal analyst, who's also a fine reporter, writes for The New Yorker. Jeffrey Toobin.
Terrific.
I was at an event that he was speaking at, and he said, you know, there are many things. The only thing that you're not allowed to say on CNN, he says, is, I don't know.
if that's true, that is a shame, and that is a representative of something that's wrong in the world. If you don't know something, say, I don't know. It speaks to the fact that none of us know everything, and we're human.
Well, I think he was somewhat tongue-in-cheek, but at least it was
I think I know an awful lot.
There we go.
Yeah, I don't know about that.
Another thing you don't hear around here. Okay, we got to stop because we've run out of time.
Wow.
How about that?
Isn't that something?
Why don't you go to an hour?
The moderation of this panel is unrivaled.
Alan Chartok, Kaylin Brown, Judy Patrick, and I'm Rex Smith, and we thank you for joining us once again this week on The Media Project.
She shipped it all back yonder to her uncle in Podunk. Now newspapermen meet such interesting people. It must have startled poor old Sadie's Unk. Ting-a-ling-a-ling, city desk. Hold the press, extra, extra, read all about it. It's a mess, meets the test. Oh, newspapermen meet such interesting people. Like the richest girl who could not bake a cake. Ting-a-ling, ting-a-ling, ling-a-ling-a-ling. Now, newspapermen are such interesting people. They used to work like hell just for romance. But finally...